You're listening to episode 108 of the Mad Chatters Podcast, October 19th, 2016.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Matt.
Hello, Radioland.
And Jeremy.
Send in the clowns.
Well, guys, we're only 2 weeks away from Halloween, so obviously it's time for Disney to start talking about Christmas. That's usually how it goes, right?
Yeah, and Hallmark Channel.
And the Hallmark Channel to talk about Christmas, or and for Disney to talk about the Hallmark Channel?
No, for the Hallmark Channel to start their 24/7, two-month-long, terrible movie festival.
Of course. Have you set your DVR?
Yeah. No, I don't watch Hallmark for 2 months.
Ah, I see. Well, when I was there October 1st, I remember standing there waiting for the stage presentation to start and noticing that the lights were already being placed on the castle, the Christmas lights were. So that just must be like a really long project.
Yeah, we were there in September and they had the cranes out. I'm like, I bet they're putting the lights on.
It's crazy to me.
Maybe they like test them for a month at nighttime after the park closes. I don't know.
I can see that because you certainly don't want a whole section to be out. That kind of ruins the magic a little bit.
Somebody's got to check each individual bulb.
Well, anyway, speaking of Christmas, Disney released a pretty big announcement this week about Christmas. So people all year, I mean, not me people, but some people have been mourning the loss of the Osborne spectacle of dancing lights.
Dancing lights.
Is that the right name?
Yeah, you left out family, but it's okay.
That's right. That's right. People, you know, were wondering, is Hollywood Studios going to have nothing for Christmas this year? Well, the answer is no. They actually will have something for Christmas, and what they announced was the best named fireworks show ever, and I say that completely ironically. Jingle Bell, Jingle Bam.
Just like,
oh, it's so bad. But the show itself kind of sounds okay. This is from the Parks blog release. Each night from November 14th to December 31st, 2016, Disney's Hollywood Studios will take the joy, excitement, and music of the season to dazzling new heights. Watch in wonder as buildings and rooftops come alive. Led by elves Wayne and Lanny, the duo from Prep and Landing, the spirited Yuletide adventure to the North Pole features memorable holiday moments from Disney films, including Mickey's Christmas Carol, Beauty and the Beast, Pluto's Christmas Tree. I don't know that one.
It's a short.
It's a short.
Yeah. I mean, I assumed it wasn't a theatrical release or anything, but
it's like Chip and Dale are in the Christmas tree and they're causing mischief.
Yeah.
Aggravating.
I have seen that. I guess I just assumed that one would be called something about Chip and Dale. Anyway, yeah, Bambi's in it, which is very interesting to me.
Like the ice skating, perhaps.
Okay, that would make sense.
Maybe when the mom gets shot.
I'm sure that's not in it.
It'll be the down moment.
Oh, I see. You have to have like an emotional downer right before the big finale.
Mother.
But speaking of the finale, it is Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. It says, all building to a festive finale that's, quote, so tinsel.
Well, that's from Prep and Landing. Have you seen Prep and Landing?
Oh, it's been a long time.
Oh, they're so good. I'm so glad that they're doing this with those characters. But yeah, it's like totally tinsel or whatever he says.
Oh, that makes more sense.
There you go. So Nightmare Before Christmas is apparently appropriate for Christmas.
There you go.
Thoughts?
I disagree.
But they also meet at the Halloween party, so who knows?
Mm. Well, they're both. It's just a three-month-long thing.
Yeah. Oh, I left out Cinderella. That's in it as well. It all builds to a festive finale that must be seen and heard to be believed. Featuring traditional holiday tunes, state-of-the-art projections, special effects, fireworks, and even a little snow, it's a spectacular evening celebration you won't soon forget.
Hmm.
So it's they're really going to make use of the Star Wars projection technology, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I would expect them to.
Oh, for sure. It's pretty impressive. Someone did mention online, what about the people who are coming for the holidays and have been looking forward to the Star Wars show that they've been promoting for really only a few months now? You know, it's really not that old. Oh, well, too bad.
You'll have to come back.
There you go.
Yeah, stop. Don't come at Christmas. Don't be stupid.
Hey, I'm coming.
sorry.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I mentioned that last week. Okay, so my Halloween party was canceled. And so what happened was we got an email. Did I talk about this? We got an email from Disney, and it said, here you go. The party is canceled tonight, but here are your options. And it was, you could either switch out for another Halloween party, which didn't really help me because I only had about 3 more weeks before Halloween, and I wasn't going to be back. You could switch it for a one-day park hopper that would be good anytime the next 2 years. You could just get a refund. Or you could do what I did, which is switch it out for a Christmas party ticket. So I did that. So I'm looking forward to being back and checking out this new this new Hollywood Studios show, Candlelight Processional, and the Christmas party. Now, Jeremy, you're all about Christmas at the Parks, right?
I love Christmas at the Parks. I love Disney and Christmas. And when you put them together, it's like putting together joy and happiness.
Hmm. Why is small one not part of this?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. They've included, I understand you got to market these kind of things for the masses, but they've included some very ambiguously Christmas films, like Bambi on the Ice is a bit of a stretch. Snow White is a bit of a stretch. Beauty and the Beast is a bit of a stretch. Especially when they have a lot of, like, I mean, obscure niche Christmas films that could work, because people look at the Hocus Pocus show. That was an obscure Halloween that that worked. So you could put in something like, I don't know, the Santa Claus, or we could talk about different Christmas movies that could fit in there.
That's a good one.
Or even why not Muppet Christmas Carol?
Oh
yeah, that'd be good.
That would be great. Yeah, Cinderella kind of baffles me a little bit.
Yeah, there's really, I mean, I can't even think of anything wintry in Cinderella, much less Christmassy. I mean, in Beauty and the Beast, they had, in the actual Beauty and the Beast film, they have the scene where they're like playing in the snow. Okay, and then there's, what is that? Like, there is one of the straight to DVDs that's like
Bells Enchanted Christmas or something like that.
So, okay, those are a little stretch. But come on, Disney, be creative.
Yeah, but I will say, I love that Mickey's Christmas Carol is part of it, because that's a classic Disney. It's a short, I guess you could consider it. But I'm so glad they're including that. To see Mickey in Hollywood Studios, I love.
Let's see, what else? What other Christmas movies are there? Looking at my collection now, of course, I don't see anything that pops out, but they're there.
Yeah, I mean, more so than Cinderella.
True.
How about the Santa Paws?
Yes. Santa Buddies. Snow Dogs.
Actually, Cinderella's not looking too bad now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that the finale is Nightmare Before Christmas. I hope it's, like, still a heartwarming finale.
I'm sure it's What's This?
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
That's a Christmassy song.
Or Kidnap the Sandy Claus.
Yes. The end. Boo, 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 boo. Those are the fireworks. Well, Jeremy, you mentioned the Muppet Christmas Carol. Speaking of Muppets, have you guys seen the Muppet Mobile Lab that's been making its way around Future World and Epcot?
Yeah, I saw it when it released, if you remember, when they did it like 3 years ago.
9 years ago.
And then it just suddenly went away after like a week. It was a long, yeah. And it just went away. And now it's back. And I'm pretty excited about it. Not that I get excited about things being there. Not that I would ever like probably stop and watch it. The whole thing, at least, but
I would.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah. Okay. So Muppets have had this reconnaissance. What's the word? Renaissance.
Renaissance. I think.
There you go. not recon. They just made a comeback, is what I'm trying to say. Like they have the new show in Magic Kingdom. Pizza Rizzo is almost open over at Hollywood Studios, and now at Epcot they have this mobile lab, which, like you said, was introduced very briefly years ago, and now all of a sudden it's back, and it's this moving vehicle with Bunsen, and Beaker. And Beaker's on the top. And like while Bunsen is talking, Beaker is like moving his legs like a bicycle, like he's controlling the vehicle, which obviously he's not. But and they're animatronics and they really interact with the guests. They can answer real-time questions and call people by name and get people excited about science is one of the clips I saw. That was their quote. We were trying to get you excited about science. It's really cool. And I love that the Muppets are getting so much attention from the Disney company.
If only this renaissance would have started maybe like a year ago, we might still have a Muppets television show on.
Well, I was going to say, that's why they have all this free time on their hands, because the TV show got canceled.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's over at Epcot. Pretty exciting. I hope to see it one day. Now, something, Matt, you pointed me out to is that another I'm really having trouble with my words. Clearly, I don't know English vocabulary.
Vocabulary? You need a thesaurus.
I guess I do. But we talked about how the spicy chicken waffle sandwich has returned. Well, not only that, but the famous cream cheese pretzel is also back in Magic Kingdom. You saw the post from Disney Food Blog. What's up with them bringing these things back? I wonder if part of me thought this may be the cynic in me. But the tiered ticketing system, where summer is most expensive, kind of felt like a ploy to even out the crowds. Do you think they took off these snack items so people would... No, that can't be right. But they're bringing them back now so more people come in the off-season. Huh?
Derek, I don't think that the average person comes for these little niche snacks like you do, but... That's a great theory.
The spicy waffle sandwich is gone? Cancel the trip!
They put that on the DVD, the vacation planning DVD. Your favorite snacks are back. The magic cookie bar, which is really a granola bar.
It is not. It's more like a...
Fiber One bar.
Trail mix bar. It's kind of like Fiber One bar. But it's good. I don't care.
Are you suffering from that post-trip constipation? Do we have the snack item for you?
I just remember walking around Animal Kingdom with you one day, and literally like every stall, every stand, you were checking the menu, looking for that cream cheese freaking pretzel.
Because why did they take it away from all four parks? That's ridiculous.
I don't know, Derek. I don't know.
Maybe the vendor ran out and they just now are getting restocked. Maybe there's not this huge conspiracy. Maybe Trump is actually losing. Maybe.
You know what's funny? I genuinely did not think about the fact that maybe they just ran out until you said that. Like, maybe the vendor was asking too much money. Anyway, but it's back. It's at the Lunching Pad in Tomorrowland, and I seriously am counting down the day. It's going to be the first thing I do when I get to Magic Kingdom is get a cream cheese pretzel.
Mm.
All right. We just hadn't talked about news in a while, so I wanted to bring up those items and talk about what's going on around the world. Speaking of around the world, let's do some eating around the world. So recently, when I went to Walt Disney World, the family I was with and I ate at Boma in Animal Kingdom Lodge, and the three of us have been there together as well. And Matt, you said you've been there recently as well?
Yeah, for my birthday. No, it was for Jessica's birthday in September.
I want to talk about it on this show because I have to say, I mean, before we get into the atmosphere and the menu and all that, I loved it even more than I remember loving it the first time we went. I thoroughly enjoyed everything about it from start to finish. So why don't you, Matt, go ahead and set up the atmosphere and what this restaurant is.
Well, it's no secret to our regular listeners how much we love the Animal Kingdom Lodge, especially in the evening. So number one benefit of eating here is that you get to go to the Animal Kingdom Lodge and see the beautiful, spacious lobby and the fireplace and the fire pit and just a wonderful atmosphere. And it's on the bottom level, so you got to go through the lobby. You're on the elevator, go down, very open air kind of feel to it. I forgot what Boma means.
You know,
doesn't it like food?
No, we asked, and the waiter said that it's like a stick-like enclosure for animals to just kind of graze around inside. And I'm like, so wait, are we in like a an animal pen? Like, what's the
theme
here? Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. It's a pig farm is what it is. And it just happens to be a buffet, so.
Right. Yeah, but that's fine. Like, the theme actually kind of fits because they've got that rail that goes all the way around the seating area that kind of is supposed to resemble it.
It is kind of stick-like.
And then above you, they've got, like, the cloths that kind of hang down, almost like hammocks. It kind of gives you feel like you're outside in some sort of African market or something.
There's a beautiful little water feature right outside before you go into the restaurant, trickling down from Victoria Falls.
It's really pretty. I mean, nothing in Animal Kingdom Lodge is not pretty. But this especially, like the poles, the...
Columns?
The column. They're like pots stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
And really colorful and woodsy. Yeah. It's a great atmosphere. Do you remember how much it was when you went? Oh, first of all, this is a buffet. So it's all you can eat. You have to go up to the line to get your food.
Now, if you're not a buffet fan, just kind of, you know, stick around for the rest of the review. Don't just turn it off.
Who hates buffets enough that they would just turn off the podcast?
Well, I don't mean turn off the podcast, but just be like, ah, it's a buffet. I don't want to go there. Like, turn off the option in their head.
Oh, okay. I'm picturing somewhere, some ways like, nope, I've had enough.
Reference the buffet, dadgummit.
Now, when I went, it was $40. This was just last week, 2 weeks ago. It was $40 per adult, but that included a drink.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that's all included. But, I mean, it's all you can eat. I honestly didn't think that that was that bad, to be honest.
Maybe they moved it up.
I've seen it. I've seen a sign. I've seen people take pictures of that sign when it was $35.99. So I'm sure it just depends on what time of year you go. But in October, it was $40. So, I mean, it's definitely not the cheapest place on property. But I will say, after my meal, I gladly handed over my money because I really just thoroughly enjoyed it. Okay, so the food. How would you describe it?
Ethnic.
From what I remember, it was like a very African-inspired, mostly. But then you had, like, chicken nuggets.
Yes. Yeah. They have a little children's section, but when I say ethnic, you know, don't get scared about ethnic, because kind of the main, if you consider it the main draw, your main course part of the buffet is just a meat carving station. So I think they had, like, the night we went, there was, like, some prime rib, there's, like, rotisserie chicken, pork loin, and, I mean, they're seasoned, but it's not like they're some kind of weird version of prime rib, it's just prime rib. So if you just wanted some good old prime rib, chicken, pork, and some regular sides and salads, they have that option. Don't think you're getting locked into some kind of ethnic meal if you're not really into that kind of thing. They have basic options. And like I said, even the main course, if you just wanted regular old steak, chicken, and pork, it's all there. The ethnic part, I think, really comes in kind of your sauces that are available at the meat table, and then a lot of the sides and some of the salads.
Yeah, I'd agree. If you're looking for something ethnic, you're going to find it. And if you're trying to stay away from ethnic, you'll be able to find what you want as well. The carving station, I remember I was there 2 weeks ago, but the line was always really long. That was the only part. So I know a lot in our party just kept going back for sides because it was a lot easier to get to those rather than stand in line for 10 minutes to get your freshly carved pork loin.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are willing to wait for the meat, my favorite thing, or one of my top three things the entire night, was the peanut-crusted salmon. Delicious. And it wasn't freshly carved. Like, there wasn't a person back there carving salmon for you.
Right.
But you did have to wait in that meat line to get to it. Oh, totally worth the wait, though. So good. And like you said, the sauces. Do you remember any of the sauces you had?
Well, I was going to say my favorite combo of the night was the prime rib with the chimichurri sauce.
Oh, I didn't try that.
Which is interesting because chimichurri is South American, but yeah, it's more like a world ethnic. You know, they're African flavors, but yeah, there was like a chimichurri sauce over next to the prime rib, and they had some like fried plantains, which are African too. So those were good. It was the small, like the tostone kind, like flattened,
okay,
hard fried, not like the potato-y kind.
I didn't see either kind when I was there. But I did see boma mustard beside the chimichurri.
Yeah, I don't think I tried that.
Oh, really good. Really good with the pork loin.
Now, something I usually do when I go to these Disney buffets is I really like instead of bypassing the soup and salad, which you can tend to do if there's a meat carving station, is go ahead and get a little sample of some of the salads, because the salads here are really good.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember everything they had. They had like a tomato, black-eyed pea kind of... I refer to it as Hoppin' John, which is kind of an American thing, but it's very similar to that. Oh, I like that relish they had at the Harambe Market. It's like that, and I really like that. They had like a fennel salad, and they had some other 15 different kinds of salads. So I got some of that, and I tried the seafood gumbo, I think.
Yeah, I think the salads and soups are actually kind of highlights of this menu.
They really are.
It's hard to say, because I feel like everything is a highlight, but... The salads and soups are not just like, oh, we put a few soups out there just so we could say we have soup.
That's what I'm trying to say. Don't skip over. It's not just filler. It's good stuff.
Yeah. In fact, one of the other best things I had was the butternut squash soup. It was the only thing I went back for seconds.
Mm.
It was delicious. And unlike any soup I'd ever had, it was really sweet and creamy. Oh, man. So good. And they have rice beside all the soup. So on one of my trips, I put like a bed of rice underneath the soup to kind of give it some texture.
Yeah, I also like the bread assortment. They had like naan and pita bread, and they had different kinds of hummus. I like that. So there's nothing on the main. And then, like we said, they have like a children's option, unless you're one of those adults that eat the children's options, like mac and cheese and chicken nuggets and random pizza and french fries and things. That's all available if you really want that.
As the children in Africa so often eat, a lot of pizza and fries.
Yeah.
Chicken nuggets. It's very authentic, yeah.
They love to heat up chicken nuggets in their microwave, yes. Okay, do you remember when we talked about quick service restaurants at the deluxe resorts, when we got to Animal Kingdom Lodge, we mentioned a lot of words that we didn't know, and one of them was bobo tea. I think that's how you pronounce
it.
B-O-B-O-T-I-E. Well, that was here at Boma, so I was excited to try it. And man, it was delicious. It was like a meat pie. I think it was beef and lamb. I don't know if it's always beef and lamb, but that night it was. And that's mixed with like vegetables in the bottom layer. And then the top layer, instead of being mashed potatoes like a shepherd's pie is, it was like an egg custard thing. Oh man, it was so good.
And it's cinnamony, right?
Yeah, it had cinnamon and curry and lots of spices in the meat.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it, and I would have gone back for more if there weren't so many other things to try.
Did you ask the waiter what bobo tea means in his language?
I did not, and I'm not totally sure my waiter spoke from that language. No.
This isn't World Showcase.
Oh.
I mean, never mind, I'm not going to say that.
I mean, he was black, but... Is that what you were going to say?
So I wasn't going to say exactly that, but that's where my mind went for a second. But also, he did have like some sort of accent. Like English was not his first language. Okay, so let's talk about the desserts.
Yeah.
So I tried three. They have lots of them. The three I tried were the banana bread pudding with
vanilla. I don't like that.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
I didn't like it. I thought that was like the one Golden Corral moment for me. Like, oh, a bread pudding. And it wasn't like Ohana bread. It wasn't like, It was just like,
Now that you say that, I can kind of see it. Like the way you like stick a big spoon in a big gloop and like get yourself out some gloop.
Yeah.
I can see
gloop.
That.
Gloop. Yeah, it glops on your plate.
Yeah. But I really liked it with the vanilla sauce on top. Okay, another thing we tried were these little... They were small enough to just be one bite, and it was called a Kenyan coffee tart.
So it was a Sam's espresso tart, and you put Kenya in front of it.
No, these were handcrafted, Matthew.
I don't remember. I don't remember trying these.
I actually didn't get it, but Terry got one. She's like, "Oh, you need to try this," so she handed me one, and it's just like a really thin tart layer on the bottom, and then it's filled with a sort of mousse texture that tastes like chocolatey coffee, and I really liked it a lot. But the star of the dessert menu,
yes,
is the zebra dome.
Yeah,
which we've talked about on the show before. It's a little dome-shaped dessert that has a layer of white cake and then amarula like, I don't know, mousse type thing. And then it's covered in white chocolate, and then it's got chocolate drizzle on top.
You mentioned that the cake is soaked in some sort of liquor.
That's where the amarula comes in.
Amaretto?
No, it's amarula. I feel like we've gone through this conversation a billion times. I need to just officially look up what's in it, but it's all those things combined some way, in some fashion.
All you gotta say is liquor. It's soaked in liquor.
It's like this liquor dessert. It's so good.
Yeah. It is delicious. It's worth the $40. I mean, if you just want to go pile up on Zebra Domes, just one after the other. Get taken. Bring me some coffee and a big old plate of Zebra Domes.
Now, one of the tips that's always gone around Twitter is to get, because they have cookies too. And the tip is to get two chocolate chip cookies, put a Zebra Dome in between them, and then smash them to make a sort of...
I think that would ruin the Zebra Dome.
I think so too, but...
I like the whole bite. I like the whole... Mm-hmm. Yep. The substance of it.
Yep. So all around, I would say Boma, two thumbs up. If you are willing to splurge, this is definitely one of the places where you can't go wrong with the money you spend.
And if you're on the dining plan, you'd be stupid not to eat here.
Wow, we just called a lot of listeners stupid.
Would be, now that you know about it.
Oh, I see. You know, the coolest thing about this place is I did not know that you can go see the animals at night. I just wasn't sure. Because, you know, if you leave the restaurant, go back up to the main lobby, and then go out those back doors where that whole wall is glass, there's a path that leads down, and you're kind of in the middle of the savanna area where there are giraffes, and there were, like, donkeys and mules and a few different other animals. And I asked if you could see them, because I'm like, well, surely they put them away at night. And apparently they don't. And you can go down this path, and there are actual guides down there who are dressed in the same outfits that the safaris drivers wear. And they're very informative, very knowledgeable about the animals. And they have three or four pairs of night vision goggles. And you can look at the animals.
Oh.
I had no idea. So we went down there. There were a few other teenagers down there already looking. But it was seriously so cool because it was so quiet. And so peaceful, like you couldn't hear anything but the crickets. But as we were looking at the animals, the guides were telling us facts about them and were saying, here, look at the goggles, you can see one over there. It was a really, really cool experience and just a great way to end a wonderful dinner.
I can sum it up here. Sum up Boma. If you like ethnic food, you've eaten Indian food, you like it. Ethiopian food, you like that. Mediterranean food, you like that. Mexican, South American food, you like that. You're going to like Boma. Okay, there's something you can find on there. If you don't like those things, but you want to take your family, you want a good experience, you can get comfortable, safe dishes also. Just try a little of everything. Don't limit yourself. And especially if you have the free dining plan, or like I said, the dining plan, take advantage of it and splurge on this.
Agreed. In fact, that's something I think we all can agree on. But now let's talk about a few things we don't agree on and do some Disney debates. How's that for a segue?
You're on them tonight. You must have been thinking about these all day.
No, I really did. During your whole little speech there at the end, I was thinking about it.
Yeah! Order in the court.
Okay, Jeremy, do you want to lay down the rules for our Disney debates?
Disney debate is when we take a topic and two of the chatters go back and forth as far as defending their idea of what the better thing is, and then the third chatter is a judge, and it's supposed to be impartial, but it never is. And so
hey, I'm impartial.
Lies.
No, you're not.
Anyways,
let's debate this. Is Derek impartial?
So anyways, Derek and I are going to debate first, and we are going to be debating about fast passes.
That's right. So Matt, we're going to be talking about which is better, Paper FastPass, the old system, or the new system, FastPass Plus. Jeremy, do you want me to go first?
Absolutely.
Okay. I think FastPass Plus is better. And I'm going to tell you why right now, because that's how a debate works. Okay, so when you have FastPass Plus, what happens is you get a book far in advance, which I know some people see as a downside, because it's like, well, what if I don't want to plan where I'm going to be 30 days from now? Well, I understand that. But having gone 2 weeks ago and not having booked any fast passes until the day before, I can tell you that it's not an issue. If you don't want to book that far in advance, you don't have to, and you'll still be okay. The greatest thing to me about FastPass Plus is that you can book from wherever you are. Whereas the old system, it's like if you want a FastPass for Space Mountain, but you're over by Splash Mountain, you really do have to make the trek all the way across the park and then get there. So in this case, there are no wasted trips. You can look on your phone and see exactly what's available, exactly when it's available, and then decide right then what's going to be the best option, rather than going to six different attractions and then finally finding one that fits your needs or fits your schedule. Another great thing about FastPass Plus is sometimes attractions open up again. So like you look in the morning, there's nothing for Splash Mountain. You look in the afternoon, oh hey, there are two for Splash Mountain. In the old system, you know, the time moves further back until they're gone completely. And then after that happens, there's no turning back. You don't have any chance whatsoever of getting Splash Mountain Fast Passes. But with the new system, it's possible for them to open up again. You can even switch if, say, you have Fast Passes for Big Thunder Mountain. You get in line, and it's a 10-minute wait. Okay, don't use them. Get in line while you are in line on your phone. You can be booking your next Fast Pass. Doesn't waste any time whatsoever, doesn't cost you time. You can do it while you're in line. Also, you know, sometimes people lose tickets. I've actually been with Jeremy when he lost his Disneyland ticket and had to go get a new one. You don't run the risk of losing your fast passes. I did throw you under the bus. I'm so sorry about that.
I was gonna say, geez.
But that really did happen. You can lose old fast passes. You can't lose FastPass Plus. It's all there on your phone, on your Magic Band. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to remember what pocket of your backpack you put them in. You know, we do everything on our phone, so why shouldn't you be able to book fast passes from your phone wherever you are? Find the best available one rather than settling for what's close to you. It's a win-win situation in my book.
Matt, I want to take you now to episode 11 of the 7th season of The Golden Girls. It's a beautiful episode in which Sophia has a near-death experience, and she goes to heaven, and she finds her husband, Sal, I'm sure you remember, and then she's brought back to life. And then
God
the remaining,
and Jesus were busy.
That's right. And then in the remaining episode moments of the episode, they travel to Atlanta to save Blanche's childhood home where her Grammy lived, that was going to be torn down to put in a cheap hotel. I'm sure you remember it fondly.
Yeah.
But there's a pivotal scene in which Dorothy is talking to Blanche in the bedroom, and Dorothy glances out the window and she sees her mother perched upon the roof, and she says, "Ma, what are you doing?" And Sophia makes the comment something to the effect of, "I've never jumped into a large pile of leaves before." But before she says that, she says the thing I'm about to say, the crutch of my argument. She says, "Living for the day, pussycat." That's really what FastPass Legacy is all about. It's about living for the day, living for the moment. You know, most people don't want to think about their lives 6 months from now. The stress and anxiety of, am I going to ride Splash Mountain on what is today, October something. So am I going to be riding Splash Mountain in May? Oh, I don't know. Oh, well, that's not 6 months. What is that? March. Am I going to be riding it then? Oh, I don't know. I'm so nervous. I need to get on my phone now and do it. I don't have time for that. I'm living for the day, pussycat. I'm living for the moment. But when you're there, maybe I don't want to ride Splash Mountain anymore. But I've been locked into it because it's 6 months ago, Disney forced me to. Maybe there's going to be a new attraction open in 6 months that I don't know about, and now I can't book that fast pass. Maybe I'm just not in the mood for those kind of things. It's just too much preparation. The problem is, Derek says everybody wants to do everything through their phone. We live too much through our phones. We need to get back to just enjoying what's around us, like those beautiful FastPass machines that are so beautifully placed around the parks, so fit to each theming. Where is the tradition? So I like paper FastPasses. Yeah, you can lose them. Guess what? I can lose my phone. What's more replaceable, a FastPass or a phone? I could lose my Magic Band. Exactly. You lose those things, it's way more expensive than a piece of paper.
How do you lose your Magic Band?
Derek, would you like a 1-minute rebuttal?
If you're going to give me the chance, absolutely. I don't think I have to tell you this, Judge, but the first 3/4 of Jeremy's argument was just incorrect and completely countered everything I already said about if a new attraction opens up, you can switch your fast pass. You're not locked into it, even though you said you are.
But what? Yes, you are, because people have busy lives. You, not everyone, Derek, is like
now,
you.
Now, sir, he didn't interrupt you.
No, I was done. I was done.
Thank you. As I was saying, not all of us can sit there and just refresh our phones hoping a fast pass pops up like some chatters have done in the past.
First of all, I do it for a minute tops, and it's usually while I'm waiting in line for another attraction. Boom. Multitasking.
My decision is ready. I have my decision. My verdict is ready. Based on the sheer weight of the argument, answering the question which one is better, I will give it to Jeremy.
Yes!
What? That is a load of poopy.
Argumentative fallacies aside, because there were many. Half of his argument was a Golden Girls reference, for one thing.
That's a good thing?
It really did capture why I love the old fast passes. Living in the moment. Living in the day. Like, you get there, and I know... Listen, Derek, love you, but all the positive things, or all the negative things you said about FastPass, the legacy FastPass, were not problems in the FastPass world until FastPass Plus. So I never had to go across the park to get another FastPass. You know, we just went in a circle. I mean, you could get to Space Mountain at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there would still be fast passes available. The only ones that I ever had to do that for were Soarin' and Test Track. And you could plan for that very easily. So, you know my love for the fast pass, the old fast pass system. And I promise, I tried to separate it from that. But the living
crap.
For the day argument. Living for the day is what it's all about.
Oh, please.
I don't enjoy getting on my phone to have to change a FastPass or to have to make sure I don't.
Matt, you're telling us right now that the reason you chose Jeremy is because it appeals to you. Like, that's what impartiality means.
No, his argument, the living for the day argument, is a good argument.
I agree.
I'm really not that angry. I just think you're completely wrong, but okay.
I don't like changing them on my phone. I really don't. I don't like having to get on there and do stuff on my phone.
But the question was not, which do you like better? It's which argument was better. Anyway.
That was the argument.
Okay. He's saying the argument.
All right. The impartial judge has decided. All right. Well, Matt, I want to go up against you now because I'm all fired up and ready to take you on. So what are we debating?
We are debating. Lord, what are we debating? We hammer this out. We're debating what is the best water feature at Walt Disney World. And I will be...
Can I guess which ones you guys are going to be arguing?
Yeah.
Okay. I think Matt's going to be arguing that little pool thing that he always talks about outside of Animal Kingdom Lodge that he always says, ooh, I just want to stick my feet in that every time we walk by.
We're doing it from your point of view.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
No. Oh, I wasn't.
Okay.
I was saying what I think is the best water feature.
Okay.
Okay, so what do you think mine was, Jeremy?
I'm going to say the Fountain of Nations at Epcot.
Well, you have chosen one of the ones we will be debating, but you picked the wrong person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I will be arguing for the Fountain of Nations. And Derek, you'll be arguing for...
the waterfall outside Wilderness Lodge.
Ah, okay.
No. Derek, I'll let you start since you're so hangry.
Okay, well, I've cooled down now. Gosh. Okay, but I think I can get fired up again. Oh, okay.
You want me to say something that makes you mad? Ooh, I hate phones.
Matt, hearing your voice is enough. I'm good to go.
Granola bars.
Okay, so the Wilderness Lodge. The theme of Wilderness Lodge, believe it or not, is to be in the wilderness. And I think... having a waterfall in the wilderness not only fits the theme, I think it's essential to the theme. Because I think if you saw that lodge, you wouldn't necessarily feel like you were in the wilderness. You might feel like you're on the Rocky Mountains. Or you might feel like you're at your cousin's log cabin down the road in Keokuk, Iowa, whatever city, whatever small town you always refer to on this show. But with that waterfall, it's like, man, I really am in the wilderness. In fact, I would argue that that waterfall is so impressive and so real looking. Obviously, it's a real waterfall, but the rock work and everything is so real that it almost looks like the lodge was built there because of the beautiful, beautiful waterfall, not that a lodge was built there and then they built rock work and waterfall around it to make it more wildernessy. It really looks like a real waterfall that is like, hey, this would be a great place for a hotel. That's how impressive it is. I love how it starts in the lobby. And just standing there in the lobby, you see it from one point of view, and then you can follow it all the way down to the pool area. And it doesn't just have one outlet. It has like a whole U-shape of outlets coming from all different rocks pouring down into a little pool there at the bottom of the hill. It's gorgeous. We've mentioned how you can see it from far away when you're coming up on a boat ride. And it's so picturesque seeing this lodge and then right in front of it seeing this waterfall. And when I said it's essential to the theme, I think that's one of the things that kind of hurts Fountain of Nations. When you have Spaceship Earth, everything kind of pales in comparison to it. So I think if the Fountain of Nations wasn't there, sure, we'd be sad. But I don't think that part of Epcot would lose its impressiveness, because Spaceship Earth alone is impressive. But without that waterfall at Wilderness Lodge, it's just any other hotel that you can find in Canada, you know, or the Northwest. But with that waterfall, I am in the wilderness. And so I think that's why it is the ultimate water feature in all of Walt Disney World, because it's the most grand, the most beautiful, and it seamlessly fits into that lodge.
We live in a divided time. We have a greatly contested election coming up in which not only are Democrats and Republicans more divided than ever, but Democrats are against Democrats. Republicans have turned against Republicans. And our world is fractured in a way that it never has been before, with violence around the world, the threat of ISIS, the bullying of Russia and China. And a cynical view of the world might look at this time and say, is there hope? Is there a bright tomorrow? Or is there just war and more division and more conflict? And Epcot, as a theme park, was based off of Walt Disney's vision of an experimental prototype community of tomorrow. An idea of optimism, a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, a bright future, and a united world, peace and reconciliation and harmony. And in the middle of that idea that has now become a theme park that we know and love as Epcot, there is the Fountain of Nations. It is aptly a water feature, because nothing says unity over the face of the earth like the bodies of water that connect us. Some see them as divisive. They divide continent from continent and land from land. But we really know that there's just, well, what is it? I was going to quote Small World, but I forgot the lyrics.
Oh, you lose.
We all know that they're not so much ways of dividing us as ways of connecting us. They are avenues toward each other. Ooh. With boats and trade and all these wonderful things that connect us as a human race. And so when we come to the Fountain of Nations in the middle of Epcot, notice that it's not in the middle of World Showcase, but it's in the middle of what? Future World. Because Walt's vision for the future, Epcot's dream of the future, is a united world. And as you recall, Jeremy, that you've told us this story many times, that on opening day, when the Fountain of Nations was dedicated, dignitaries from around the world came and put water from their native land into the fountain as a gesture and a symbol of unity. That yes, we come from different places. These waters come from different tributaries and lakes all over the earth, but they're coming together in this place and at this time to show that we are one and our future is brighter together. And that is my spiel for why the Fountain of Nations is Walt Disney World's best water feature.
Wow. I gotta say, both of those arguments were lacking in many areas. They both were they were about water features, but never really told me why the water feature was good. At least not practically speaking. Both failed to mention the actual functions of the water, but that's okay.
I talked about outlets a lot.
I think Derek needs to broaden his horizons about what makes a wilderness a little bit, because it doesn't have a waterfall. Apparently, Derek is changing the definition.
Not really. It's not wilderness after all.
And I think Matt is a little it's sad that the UN Secretary General election was a couple weeks ago, because you could have won with that speech. That was...
Well, I was just appealing to the overall meta-narrative of the Fountain of Nations rather than its perfunctory functions, which just serve as a superficial way of describing it.
Yes. That being said, I'm going to give it to Matt, because, again, Derek, I didn't quite follow your argument of... it's not the wilderness unless there's a waterfall, because I've been in lots of wildernesses. I feel like I've at least seen pictures, and there's not waterfalls everywhere. In fact, I would argue that it's more rare to see a waterfall in the wilderness than, well, that's just, I don't know these things. I'm not an outdoorsy person.
Exactly. You do not know. I think that's what we've learned here today.
But Matt's argument there about the meta narrative of the Fountain of Nations made more sense to me and seemed more logical about why that water feature is better.
Yeah.
Even though he failed to mention just this the beauty of the show and the
music. It's not about that. It's not about that.
It is about that. Well, and I was gonna say, like, your argument was better, I'll give it to you. And you still didn't even mention, like, the amazing shows that are themed to music, and just the fact that it's a really grand fountain that even if you didn't know why it's there or the history of it, like, it really adds to that part of the park.
And you also almost lost me when you... I love the beginning. I've just crept into these are dark times. But you lost me almost with your American-centric mindset of Republicans are against Republicans.
Well, no,
the world
was the
is divided.
That was the start. No. The world was not a reference to America. The world was a reference to the world.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, let's go move on to the final argument then.
Oh, yeah. There's one more. Okay. Let's hear it.
Matt and I are going to be arguing Disney-adjacent things. Which sitcom is better, Golden Girls or Frasier?
Yeah, what in-show sitcom reference is better?
Oh, okay. Frasier or Golden Girls?
Yeah. Because you love both.
Wait, what? In-show reference?
In-show reference, like shows that we reference on this show.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
And this is very meta. You're debating...
which references are better.
Okay.
I'm going to argue that the Golden Girls are better because, one, all three of us, I think we identify the most with the Golden Girls. We are friends who are close, who are all very distinctive personalities, and we get along most of the time. Matt is totally a Dorothy, as we have discussed before. Derek is Rose, although he has Dorothy tendencies. And I'm definitely a Blanche/Sophia. So we all have our different personalities, and we all function similarly. That being said, Golden Girls is timeless. You can watch that show today, which was filmed almost 30 years ago, and you still laugh and laugh and laugh. And I would like to think that the Mad Chatters are timeless in a similar way. That 30 years from now, after we're dead, that somebody's going to be listening to this show. Yeah, I predict we're not going to make it long, just throwing that out there. But somebody will be watching this show in reruns or listening to the show, and they will just laugh and laugh and laugh. Also, which show has closer Walt Disney World ties? The Golden Girls. Did Frasier ever go to Walt Disney World? Nope. Sophia and Dorothy did. Did Frasier ever sing It's a Small World on the show? Nope. But the Golden Girls did. You know what was an ongoing joke in several episodes is Sophia wanting to go ride Splash Mountain / Space Mountain. There was one episode where Dorothy tricks her into going to a therapist, and she walks in wearing a life preserver and says, hey, this isn't the line for Splash Mountain. So there you go. Only Disney fans are going to know that. So Golden Girls is just one of those things that's relevant to our lives every day. And I would argue that a day without Golden Girls is like a day without sunshine. It's just not worth living.
Wow. I didn't know you felt that way about cloudy days. We need to talk about that.
That's sad. In terms of in-show references, you know I love the Golden Girls. I do. And one of my favorite shows ever. But there is a certain kitschy...
the gasp.
There's a certain kitschy charm that the Golden Girls have. That's funny and charming and wonderful. And, you know, I love watching the Golden Girls and one of my favorite shows. But when Frasier is referenced on our show, Frasier naturally brings with him an air of sophistication, an air of class, and just a soupçon of elegance. And so I feel like with the Golden Girls, while I love them, the standards of our show, when we mention them, are being brought down a couple notches.
No, you did not. Ah.
Trump, quit with the gasping and the sighing.
Wrong. But I feel like when Frasier is mentioned, a certain air of sophistication comes over the show. People say, these gentlemen like good television. Love the Golden Girls. Love Golden Girls fans. I wouldn't want to remove them from the show, but, you know, it's apples and oranges. It's like saying, hey, we're going to the buffet. On this buffet, there is bread pudding, and there is prime rib. Okay? The bread pudding is good and delicious and comforting, but it's comforting on a junk food level, whereas the prime rib is good because of the marbling and the cut of meat and the wonderful class of the taste that comes with a nice cut of steak.
Objection, that's ageism. Are you saying they can't be prime rib because they're old ladies and don't have teeth?
No, because my favorite character on Frasier is Martin Crane, which is a senior citizen, so... We can all bring class or age classification into this.
When they're like, I know a black guy, I'm not racist. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, he's the token old guy. No, I love it. Frasier's multicultural. There's a British person is one of the primary characters. So I would just argue from a point of class and raising the standard of the listenership. Referencing Frasier is a better go at that than referencing Golden Girls. I know you love both, Derek, so it's gonna be hard for you to choose between the references.
Well, I really do enjoy Frasier. I've just seen a lot more episodes of Frasier than I have Golden Girls, and I've always enjoyed them.
He's recently confessed he's never watched a whole episode of Golden Girls, if
it
you
is
remember.
True, which is exactly why I don't know whether to be flattered or offended by the Rose and
yes.
Dorothy comment.
Yes.
So I'm just going to let that slide.
Rose offended, Dorothy complimented.
Great. I'm all Rose with a touch of Dorothy. Anyway.
No, Derek would be honored to be Rose.
Okay.
Because Rose is a sweet person, although she is a
stupid.
Bit naive. Naive. Not stupid.
Okay.
She has her moment. Can I tell this story? So
I really don't want you to.
Hey, let's make the decision first. Make the decision first. We don't want any further arguments being influenced here.
Okay. So I hesitate to decide because I feel like I'm encouraging more references from either of these shows, and that is not what this is. But I have to side with Jeremy. Just because he brought in the fact that Golden Girls does have a lot of Disney tie-ins. And you didn't even mention the fact that the Golden Girls facade was actually in Disney World for a time.
Yeah. This all goes with my argument that the Golden Girls are a little too on the nose.
Well, he has decided.
And also, this is not part of your argument, like I've already decided, but another argument I personally would have made is that we've had a lot of listener response be like, yes, Golden Girls, or check this Golden Girls reference out. Not once have we heard anyone be like, yes, Frasier.
This is a challenge. Where are my Frasier people at? Or if I was saying it in Frasier terms, where are the Frasier fans located?
at what location? Anyway, so that is my ruling. Now, what story were you going to tell?
Oh, okay. So this is like the ultimate Rose story for me and with you. This is when I knew you were a Rose. Okay. So when you and Matthew came to visit me in Miami, and we were walking down Miami Beach, and the gentleman walking in front of us lit up a marijuana cigarette. Do you remember this?
No.
You don't remember? Joint? This? Well, I was trying to use Frasier terms since we're appealing to that audience, apparently.
A marijuana cigarette.
Anyways, so this guy just decides to light up as we're walking down the street in the middle of the afternoon in Miami Beach. And if you've ever smoked marijuana, you know it has a very potent fragrance to it. And so Derek had never, I guess, smelled that before.
Oh, yes, I have.
Well, because you turned and looked at me very loudly and goes, oh, what stinks? And I was like, oh, that man.
I do not remember this at all. I thought you were going to tell the story of where after we walked on the beach, we went back. Oh gosh, I just forgot this. We went back to the street where they have the shower, little things you can rinse off your feet. And so I stuck my foot under the faucet. I pulled the rope, not realizing that that rope was for the overhead shower. And it just poured on me, on my head, not on my feet.
That too is a Rose moment.
Oh.
And you're from what, Sisney? And you're from Sisney, Illinois?
That's correct.
That's kind of like a St. Olaf.
A little small farm town, yes.
Midwest, yeah.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up. Jeremy, good job. You won two.
Thank you.
Matthew won one. And I'm the lone soul who won zero. We wanted to take some time to talk about the hotels that are at Walt Disney World. It's a topic we kind of briefly discuss in opening segments every now and then, but we don't actually devote a lot of time to them. But I personally think they are one of the best things at Walt Disney World, because I know people who are Disneyland regulars talk about how they love coming to Walt Disney World simply because there are so many different options, so many different resorts, all of them with a different theme, something different to offer, a different location, different access to different parks. And so it's really a neat added element to Walt Disney World. It's what makes it Walt Disney World and not just Disneyland or a Disney park. However, having so many hotels to choose from is also one of the most intimidating things about Walt Disney World. I know we've gotten a few emails from listeners who are taking a trip and just kind of their general question is, I don't know where to stay. Like, what would you recommend? There are so many options. You know, I'm not rich, but I also don't want to stay in the places that you guys hate. So hopefully on this episode, we can just give some basic tips, which is why we're calling it Hotels 101, just some basic tips for where to stay or what might be good for you, even if it's not right for someone else. So first of all, I feel like we should just talk about what are the Walt Disney World resorts. Matt, can you break that down for us?
Elucidate?
Yes.
Yeah, that was our word of the week last week. I thought I'd bring it back. There are 34 on-site resort hotels.
Wow.
That are at Walt Disney World. Of those 34, 28 are owned and operated by Walt Disney World. So, excluding the Disney Springs Resort Hotels, your Holiday Inn, Best Western, Hilton, the West, not the Westin. What's the W one?
Wyndham.
Wyndham. The Buena Vista Suites, and then your Swan and Dolphin, which those are in kind of a middle ground. There are 28 total Walt Disney World Resort hotels to choose from. Of those 28, they are what?
When you said Buena Vista Suites, it reminded me of One Man's Dream. Like, it sounded like you're saying Buena Vista Street.
Oh, Suites. Suites. Yes.
I saw you laughing, and I'm like, what's happening? What did I miss?
Yeah, that's why I stopped. Like, why are you laughing? So in the 28... The 28 resorts owned and operated by Walt Disney World are subdivided into three categories. Three basic categories. There are some other things we could talk about. Three basic categories. The value resorts, which are the more economical. You're looking at about, if you find a good deal, Florida Residence Annual Pass and some seasonal rates, maybe like $90 through $150, depending on time of year. The moderate resorts. And there are differences for these breakdowns, which we can talk about. The moderate resorts, which you're looking at $150 to maybe $275 a night. And then the deluxe, which would be $275, $300 and up, depending on your various options for those. So there are a lot of choices, and it can be daunting, but we're here to help.
That's right.
And yeah. Derek, you have been posting photos of deluxe prices recently. Oh, would you like to elaborate?
Sure, yeah. So you talked about the prices for value and the prices for deluxe. I can tell you that the value actually goes cheaper than that, and the deluxe goes much, much more expensive than that. Okay, so...
I said and up.
No, you're right. Now that I have an annual pass, and I've been going a little bit more often, every once in a while I'll look at what the rates are, because I'm like, you know what? I would be willing to splurge to have just a couple nights, maybe... like a once-in-a-decade experience to just spend a couple nights in Animal Kingdom Lodge, Beach Club, something like that. So I priced out a couple nights in late November, like the week after Thanksgiving. A night at All-Star Sports would actually only cost me $79. I personally don't think it's even worth that, so I said no, and I kept scrolling down. A night, November 30th, with my annual pass discount at Contemporary Resort, would be $1,965.
So what's the problem?
Child, you must be joking. Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, that's a bit excessive.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Is that Garden View?
Yeah, I don't even know. I think you had to actually click on it, and then you would see your options after that.
Yeah, I want to stay in some deluxe resorts as well. And if you can afford that, more power to you. But That is. I can do a lot of things with almost $2,000 and stay at the Contemporary's really low on that list. Mm.
Well, I think the cheapest deluxe resort, there were two. One was Saratoga Springs and one was Yacht Club. And I think it's because both are under construction right now. And I think one was $250 a night and one was $275 a night. So
okay, $250 is not bad.
Right. If the $250 had been Animal Kingdom Lodge, I might have been able to talk myself into that. But Saratoga Springs, I'm like, not really at the top of my bucket list.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Matt, when you stayed at the conference you've talked about before, how much was it again when you stayed at the Contemporary for that conference? Even though, were you actually with the conference, or you just say that so you could get the pricing?
No, we were with the conference. Now, you do have to register through the conference website. And so when you call and make reservations with the hotel that's hosting it, such as the Contemporary, or sometimes even the Grand Floridian hosts some of the people, you have to tell them your registration number. They look it up. You know, they make sure you're registered. But it was, for the Contemporary, $145 a night.
Dang, that's good.
That's for that really conference. Good.
Yes. Now, here's something interesting. There's another side of that same conference, which is youth ministry oriented, and their hotel lodging place is the Grand Floridian for $186 a night.
That's really good too.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, let's talk about why they charge this. Like, what separates value from moderate from deluxe? Maybe we should start with value. Why are they able to charge so little? What are you going to get out of that?
Cheerleaders.
More often than not, you know, if the odds are likely. Yeah.
Last time I stayed at an all-star resort, I got cheerleaders. That sounds weird.
Yeah, no, Value Resorts is basically, and again, I know we have disdain towards them. We've kind of made some comments, and justifiably so, I would say. I stand by comments that we make on this show. But again, they're not terrible. It's not a terrible, you're not going to be sleeping in a tent, or, you know, it's not India or anything like that. It's a legitimate property. It's not going to be gross. It's not going to be dirty. It's not going to be grungy. It still is a Disney property, and so it is a good value for the money that you spend. The problem is, it is very closed. You've got usually three stories. Everybody's on top of each other. The rooms are not necessarily big. Your standard size small hotel room. There's a lot of rooms available, so it's not necessarily an intimate setting as far as you get this feeling of being – like at the Caribbean Beach, it has more of an intimate feeling than, say, Value Sports, you know, kind of thing, or All-Star Sports. So you definitely are sacrificing some luxuries, but as we've also said on the show, we're not resort people. We're not the type to stay in the resort all day and that kind of thing. So every trip I've been on with you guys, maybe we go back to swim or whatever, but we spend most of our times in the park.
That's true. Yeah. If you also are park people, then don't worry about splurging so much and you're going to be totally fine at one of these. I think one of my biggest complaints, the more I go to Disney, is that there's only one bus stop. So when I was at All-Star Sports a few months ago, I stayed so far away from the main building. And every morning I had to make that trek because there's only one place to get out of there. There's only one bus stop. So that's kind of a headache. And I think we've mentioned this before. One of my big things is the sinks. And there's only one sink in the All-Star rooms or the Value rooms, which, like you said, just kind of adds to them being smaller.
That is a family trait, though, for you.
It is. We want two sinks, and we want them to be outside of the room where the toilet is. It's a big deal. Oh, we also should mention that Value Resorts are not going to have a table service restaurant in them.
No, but that's also, which we're not talking about them yet, that's also kind of fairly new for the moderate resorts, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I'd just say with your Value Resorts, the immersiveness of the environment lacks compared to the other resorts, which we'll talk about later. And it's certainly more on the nose. You know, sports is sports, you know, giant things. And here's, you know, it's all up in your face and very obvious and blatant. And there are other things. Let's continue on. I think I'll be able to talk more about them as we move on into the other classifications.
Yeah. So moderate, you said table service is new there?
Yeah. I think the first one to have a table service option was Coronado Springs with the Maya Grill. Actually, you know, boat rides might have always been in the Port Orleans Riverside or Dixie Landings as it was called.
Are you saying Shudders was not in Caribbean Beach when that first opened?
Shudders has not always been in Caribbean Beach when it first opened. No, I think that was added in the last 10 years or so.
Did not know that.
And you can also see that when you go there. It kind of was, it looks like it used to be part of the food court and they kind of walled it off over there.
But I definitely agree what you're saying about theming, that there's a noticeable difference between Value and moderate, even in just the theming.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about room size and whether or not you think the one bus stop is a convenience or an obstacle or the quality of the food and the food court and things like that. And honestly, those things are truly there and they are part of the reason it costs less. But to me, as someone who enjoys the immersive environment of a moderate resort or deluxe resort, that's where it really counts for me, is how much just how much Disney magic are you getting in your resort of choice? I mean, it comes down to landscaping, the way that the way the buildings look. I mean, it's just a lot more flat at the All-Stars and even Pop Century to an extent, and Art of Animation to an extent as well.
Yeah, to me, the Value Resorts are hotels with an on-the-nose theme. Whereas the moderate, you start to get to like resorts that are immersive. So I'm in the Caribbean on a beach, as opposed to I'm at a hotel that's supposed to look like a beach. You know what I mean?
Or in a building that has a Toy Story theme.
Right. If it were a moderate resort, like, you would be a toy, and everything around you would be like a giant bed and a giant poster and all sorts of things.
Well,
shrunk down to the size of a toy. What a novel concept.
Now, in that area, they are big. Like, Woody and Buzz are large, but so is everything else. So the marimbas and things over at All Star Music are humongous, too. Now, here's the thing we should say about value resorts, if we're still talking about value resorts, is that they're not bad. All Star Sports, I would never stay there. I would go All Star Movies, All Star Music, or the other two, Pop Century, which I've stayed there and it's great. Art of Animation, never stayed there, but it looks okay. You know, they're not bad. It's kind of like Good, Bad, and the Ugly. You know, when we play that little game, they're the bad, but they're not really that bad. I mean, if you're looking for a little less expensive, you don't care about immersive environment, but you still want some of the perks at staying on property, and you want that feeling of getting on the Disney bus and going to your Disney resort at night, the All-Stars, they'll be just fine for you.
Okay, so what would be your ultimate value pick if you had to pick right now to stay at a value?
Pop Century.
I'd say the same.
Yeah, Pop Century.
And I've stayed there before, so that's saying something.
Now, here's one of the why I say that. I mean, it's certainly a little less Disney-fied than, let's say, All-Star Movies, if you were to stay in Toy Story or Fantasia or something that's obviously Disney. And there are elements of the Pop Century which I rolled my eyes at, which we've talked about, like the words on top of the buildings that are supposed to say something about the decade, like beehive hairdo. It's like you could have left that off and I would have been okay with that. But overall, the feeling is a little nicer feeling than the All-Stars, and it's by itself. So when you go to the All-Stars, you're practically at one big resort in terms of bus stops. And so that could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on if you're coming or going. you stop at all three, and it can get a little frustrating, which we've seen our one classic Disney meltdown crazy lady at the All-Star resorts before. So it can trigger those kind of reactions.
If you stay at an All-Star, you will go crazy.
Yeah, so don't stay in All-Star. No, they're okay. Just understand what you're paying for.
So we talked about theming at moderate resorts. What else sets it apart? Because I know, for me personally, one of the things I loved was having that pool that almost felt like our own pool at Caribbean Beach, because they have several smaller pools along with the main pool.
Yeah, each little... in the moderate resorts, the places are divided into like groups of buildings. So, which the values are too, but just think about it this way: the moderates are just more expansive. They cover a larger amount of land. They're more spread out. There's a lot more landscaping in between, and trails and walking, and it's just a lot more natural, flowing environment there. So they're separating these little groups of buildings, and each little group of buildings will have its own what they call a quiet pool, because not necessarily that children aren't allowed there, but it's not the main themed water slide pool. Mm-hmm. It's just a little small quiet pool there in your little area that's a pretty easy walking distance from your building.
Am I wrong in saying that none of the moderate resorts have three stories? I know Caribbean Beach doesn't.
Coronado does.
Okay.
If not in one of the sections, then in two. I think they have them in the... They either called the haciendas or something like that, but there's a whole section that's it borders on the hotel-like feel. But that's also the convention center moderate resort, the Coronado Springs, so that might be why.
Gotcha. Moderate is usually my go-to nowadays if I'm staying there for multiple days, because it really just has more of a Disney feel to me, or more of like an experience vacation feel to me than the values do, but I'm not ready to dole out hundreds of dollars per night. So for me, moderate feels like a good, safe choice.
Where did you stay on this last trip? I don't think you ever said.
Oh, we actually stayed in Bonnet Creek, which is an area inside Walt Disney World, but they have their own resort. So we stayed at the Wyndham Bonnet Creek. It was a timeshare sort of situation. Oh, okay. Yeah. So
I like to point people to the lobbies, the check-in procedure. At all of your All-Stars, even at the Pop Century, the lobby, like your first impression of the resort, is very mall-like, like shopping mall. You know, it's just kind of very, I don't even know how to describe it. Not sterile's not the word. I mean, it's bright and colorful, and it's not like it's boring or anything, but it's very, I don't know what you would think of with a pop-themed resort.
No, I get that, because you have the gift shop on one side, the arcade on the other, the loud food court down the hall.
Yeah, it's kind of tile floors. It's just kind of like you're in an old, like, late 90s, early 2000s shopping mall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, as you go to the moderate resorts, I always think of Port Orleans Riverside. Coronado Springs has a beautiful lobby. There's always a fountain, you know, right when you walk in the door, and then you turn to the right, and there's the check-in. It's a long, at least with Port Orleans Riverside and Coronado Springs, they're both just large, almost like cathedral-style halls, you know, where you go to check in. Port Orleans Riverside has the big fans, the vertical fans spinning on the top, and it's just all nice and white and clean. And then in Coronado Springs, there's beautiful murals and kind of the Mexican tile work on the ground and all the flags and the woodwork and the lanterns. It just all feels very, and you're immediately in that theme. Or the environment that you're supposed to be in.
Okay, so the ones that fit this list for moderates, that is, are Caribbean Beach, Coronado Springs, Port Orleans French Quarter, Port Orleans Riverside, and I guess the cabins at Fort Wilderness also fall in this category. So if you had to pick one, like we did for the value, where would you stay?
Port Orleans Riverside.
Which side? Alligator Bayou or Magnolia Bend?
I used to like the Magnolia side of things because it had the big plantation houses, and it's just very stately and pretty. But I kind of got to where I like the Alligator Bayou part, and it is like a different feel. It's a like wooded feel, and it's more swampy, and I like that area now.
I am going to go with Port Orleans Riverside as well, but I'm going with the Magnolia side because I like to stand out in the yard in front of those big plantation homes and twirl and hum the Gone with the Wind theme while I'm out there.
Nice.
Ah.
Da, yeah. Da, da. Anyway,
close.
That was right.
That's
was
right.
It not?
That's Scarlett's theme.
Bom,
yeah.
Bom, bom, bom.
That's my favorite
bom,
movie.
Bom, bom, bom.
Right. That's the next line.
No. Bom, 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 bom. Then the second one is. Bum, 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 bum.
What is happening?
Go check it. Fact check.
Okay. I'm torn because I did like Port Orleans Riverside a lot when I stayed there, but I've seen those pictures of the refurbished rooms at Caribbean Beach, and they look really good. Like, I'd have to go back there and stay in the new rooms before I make a decision.
Yeah. They did some nice renovations at Coronado Springs, but they didn't do the bathrooms.
Oh.
And so they're still just kind of like Best Western-y bathrooms.
Oh, that's sad.
But the Coronado Caribbean Beach do look nice. I mean, anything's better than the... It's hard to believe that that was acceptable once, but looking at pictures, you're like, wow, that's really what we like stayed in the 90s and the 2000s, was like the Nemo bed sheets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a child's room now that you look at it.
It really did, but now they look great. And I think I would actually give the upper hand to Caribbean Beach because I love that body of water that's in the middle. I love the colors of the buildings. And it doesn't feel... Like, sometimes Port Orleans Riverside, it's so expansive that I think that kind of actually hurts it or hinders it a little bit.
I'd say that for Coronado Springs, but not for Port Orleans.
Okay. Well, I think you couldn't go wrong with either of those choices, though. But let's get to the deluxe, which I personally have never stayed in. So, Matt, we're going to have to rely on you for this.
For my 2 nights.
Well, that's true. But, okay, so what sets these apart? Why are they able to charge $1,965?
Because of the appeal and the proximity to the theme parks.
Mm-hmm.
And the amenities. There's lots of reasons why for instance, the three that I think of, obviously, right off the bat, are the Grand Floridian, the Polynesian Village Resort, and the Contemporary. Because they are on the monorail loop. I mean, the Magic Kingdom is literally, you go get on the monorail.
When it's working.
Yeah. Or you get on a boat, one of the wonderful little charming boats that go. Except for Contemporary, you could walk to Magic Kingdom in less than 15 minutes. Literally. I think you look at the building when the Grand Floridian is just so massive and expansive, and the lobby is so beautiful, and it's so much of a trademark, you know, just the look of the Grand Floridian. And then the Contemporary, the A-frame, and the monorail goes through it. You got Chef Mickey on the fourth floor. You got the convention center right there. Grand Floridian has the spa. The Polynesian has you know, it doesn't really have a lot, does it? It has Ohana.
You're right. That's enough.
It's spread out. I mean, it's all about proximity and the amenities that are afforded you when you stay there. Same thing for Wilderness Lodge, Boardwalk, Yacht and Beach Club, very close to Epcot and all that.
Yeah, I read today something I'd never thought of, that every single deluxe resort except for Animal Kingdom Lodge has non-bus access to at least one park.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we've talked in an episode past about how I think it was Jeremy that said a train from Animal Kingdom to Animal Kingdom Lodge would be great.
No, like you said, like safari vehicles or jeeps or something.
Train though, I like train too. Like the and you actually throw your luggage on top, like the one going to Rafiki's Planet Watch.
Ah, nice. That would be kind of cool.
But safari vehicles would be fun too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly don't even really mind them charging. I mean, that $1,965, that's a little extreme. But the $300 to $400, I look at them and I think, yeah, that's probably worth that. Not only because of transportation, but you have the indoor entrances. You have really nice restaurants. I mean, more than one nice table service restaurant at all of these resorts. They're just beautifully themed. You do have a lot of amenities inside the room and inside the lobby and just off the lobby and things like that.
It just takes what the moderates do, you know, the immersive environment, the theme, it feels really nice. It just takes that and multiplies it to the max. I mean, it's just every time when you walk into a deluxe resort, maybe in a way that you don't do in a moderate resort. And a moderate resort makes you go, wow, this is nice. This feels really nice and clean, and it's wonderful to come back to. But when you go to the deluxe resorts, there's not one of them that doesn't make you say, wow. Mm-hmm. And to some extent or the other, it's just the expanse of the lobby. I mean, I don't think the rooms are that much bigger. I mean, they are a little bigger. And, you know, some of the updates and some of them are very, very nice. But still, for the most part, the deluxe rooms are just hotel rooms. I mean, it's not like you get a suite just by paying the bottom price. You still get two beds and the bathroom that is connected. You do get a balcony at deluxe resorts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's nice. And that can afford you some wonderful views, which you will also pay for.
Yeah.
In Magic Kingdom or what have you. So, I stayed at the Contemporary, like we said, once. And it was for two nights. And it was, don't get me wrong, it was wonderful. And we had a Magic Kingdom view. Like, we could have sat out on our balcony and looked at the Magic Kingdom. And we could have watched fireworks if it wasn't ghastly CCM concerts going on all night. But that was wonderful. Don't get me wrong. It was wonderful to wake up and just be able to go down and get on the bus or walk over to the Magic Kingdom. But at least at the Contemporary, the feel was... I've talked about this before. It was a little stark, like staying in a shopping mall. I wouldn't put it on the same level of Disney Magic as maybe the Grand Floridian or the Polynesian or certainly the Wilderness Lodge or Animal Kingdom Lodge.
That's funny because the more I go to Disney World, I think Contemporary would be my first choice of the monorail resorts.
That makes sense.
For me?
Yeah.
Oh.
You're kind of stark.
I'll take that. I'll put that in my pocket. Okay, yeah. So this is the hardest decision for me. Okay, so we've got... Okay, I'm not going to mention the villas. That's something different. I mean, we're just going to set those aside for a second. But here are your options. Animal Kingdom Lodge, Beach Club, Boardwalk Inn, Contemporary, Grand Floridian, Polynesian Village Resort, Wilderness Lodge, and Yacht Club. If you had to choose, where would you stay?
Mine is honestly a tie. Can I do that between the Polynesian Village Resort and the Beach Club Resort? I really like that area over there at the Yacht and Beach Club and walking to World Showcase and the kind of New England nautical theme it's got going on. I like that, but obviously Polynesian Village is up there.
Yeah. Polynesian Village has great views of Magic Kingdom, which is nice, but I too would pick Beach Club. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why, but it's just been at the top of my list for a few years now. The location, being able to walk to World Showcase. Technically, you could walk to Hollywood Studios. There's a nice boat to Epcot. And just the theming of that, the beach look of it all.
Yeah, I always like the appeal of Grand Floridian. Something about that turn of the century. It brings that classiness that Matt was trying to say that Frasier was, but it's not. No, I like Hello Dolly and Mary Poppins, and I get those kind of feels when I'm at the Grand Floridian. Like, you should be dressed up, even though it's hot outside. I should be wearing a suit jacket. Not a suit jacket, but like a... Not like a heavy suit jacket. Like what...
This is so specific. I feel like Grand Floridian fits your enjoyment of the Golden Girls. I feel like somehow those are connected.
I could see that. I could see it. Yes. I could see that. Plus, it has a Mad Hatter-themed swimming area, so come on.
That is true. And now it has the chairs that were from Mad Tea Party over in DCA, and they do like this little dessert party on the water every day.
Do you think they shipped those actual chairs, or do you think they molded new ones?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because that's really expensive for those hunk of plastic pieces of crap.
Yeah, they were pretty crappy.
But they shipped in the Main Street Electrical Parade, so they've done it.
Oh, burn!
May it rest in peace, as it goes back to the East Coast.
Yeah,
West Coast.
Exactly.
West Coast. Yeah.
Okay, so before we finish up this topic, I feel like we should talk about on-property versus off-property, because even though Disneyland, staying off-property is a lot more feasible and makes a lot more sense than it does at Disney World, that's still an option at Disney World, to stay off-property.
This is a subject that has come up more than once, obviously, on our podcast, staying off-site or staying on-site. Obvious benefits to staying on-site, Disney magic. Coming yep. home to a Disney resort. My feeling when you stay on property... My feeling is that when you're at the parks and when you go to the hotel, there's not this stark difference between the wonderful, magical world that you've been in all day and, okay, back to the real world for the night. It's not – you don't feel like you're coming back and forth into vacation and non-vacation, like vacation back to the hotel, vacation back to the hotel, like you get at most places. It's a continuation of it. So you leave Adventureland and go home to – you know, the Polynesian Village or Coronado Springs or something. It just all feels like you're all wrapped up in that little cozy Disney magic blanket the whole time you're there. That being said, it's not necessary, and you can still have a wonderful Disney vacation staying off property. They're just things to be aware of. You do not get the free Disney transportation. Now, if you stay on the on-site, technically on-site Disney Springs Resort area hotels, like I mentioned earlier, the Hilton thing and the Best Western and DoubleTree Suites and Wyndham, Buena Vista Palace, all those places are great, and they have their own bus system, but it is not the Disney transportation system, and you'll have one bus that comes supposedly every 30 minutes. Every single encounter I've ever had with that bus system at those places has been terrible, and they don't come on time, and... When you go to the Magic Kingdom, for instance, with a Disney resort on a Disney bus, you're dropped off at the front gate to the Magic Kingdom park. If you go through those other hotels or your off-site resort hotel's shuttle or bus or something, they're going to drop you off at the ticket and transportation center. So at that point, if you have to pay for parking, you know, that's the thing you might have to think about. $25. Okay, that's a thing. I don't know if you have to pay for parking if you're staying at a Disney Springs Resort area hotel. Do you?
I don't know.
I think you probably do because you don't have a key to the world thing.
Yeah, maybe. That was one of the first things I thought of, too, was paying for parking. Like, Sometimes you save so much staying off property if you really don't care about where you stay, you know, that even paying for parking, you're still going to be under what you would pay for on site. So I don't blame families sometimes for staying off property, but you do miss out on a lot. You were talking about that shuttle. When we stayed at the Wyndham in Bonnet Creek, there was a shuttle, and I think you like reserved it, you know, like, hey, we're leaving at 9:30, but it was $8 per person round trip every single time you took it.
Oh my.
So I'm glad I had my, you know, free parking with my pass, and we had rented a van, so that saved our butts. But for the families who didn't have a car, man, that's a lot of money.
Some of those on-site, let me tell you, some of those off-site resorts or hotels you stay at, they will advertise their free shuttle. But that free shuttle means, for one, you know, for instance, like I said, you'll be waiting at the hotel in the morning for 30 minutes, 45 minutes to an hour before your bus is actually there to go to your theme park that you want to go to. And then in the evening, this isn't for all of them, but for some of these off-site resorts, their shuttle or their bus or whatever it is that provides transportation will pick you up in the bus parking lot. So you will have to remember which number or which slotted parking space you're supposed to be at what time. So I remember one time we stayed off-site and took their shuttle in, and they pulled us into the bus parking lot. And they said, okay, be back here in parking spot 20 at 11 o'clock, and that is it. That's when you go home.
Wow.
And like you said, it's not like you could save money staying off-site. It's just all a matter of how do you want your experience to be?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you this right now. The last few times I've gone, I've stayed on property, you know, several times. I don't need to when I go for just a few days and meet up with local friends. So the last few times I've gone, I've stayed at the Red Lion, which is near the All-Star Resorts, near Animal Kingdom Lodge. It's been very inexpensive, but you and I have both agreed that it's actually pretty nice, relatively speaking. Like, you're going to have everything you need. It's in good shape. It's in good condition. They take good care of you. And for me, staying off property works because if I'm going to pay for travel expenses and it's just me, then I don't mind renting a car because I have free parking. I don't mind staying off property and not getting those magical things because I know I'm going to be in the park most of the day. So I feel like there are definitely situations where staying off property just kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, your first vacation as a family, it's hard to miss out on all that magic that you get when you stay on property.
One of the times when you just have to stay on property is if Disney World is offering the free dining package. I mean, that's a no-brainer. You're obviously going to save immense amount of money not paying for, really not having the need to pay for any food while you're there. And you get to stay on property. Now, it's non-discounted room rate and ticket rate, but I mean, still, when you're saving who knows how much a day, that's at least like 30, 20, probably like at least $50 to $60 a day per person you're saving. And that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Well, I think we've exhausted the hotel topic, but I think it's a good thing to discuss, especially if people are planning that first trip, because it can be very intimidating, very overwhelming deciding where to stay and why. So hopefully we've given a few helpful tips to at least a few people. But if it's okay with you guys, I'm going to wrap it up here. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again. Go find us online on Instagram at Mad Chatters and Twitter at Mad Chatters and Facebook. And we really appreciate those iTunes reviews. They help people find us. It just makes it easier to locate us online. So keep those coming if you don't mind. That's all I have. So we'll see you next week.
Hey, take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.
On this week's show, we want to take a little time to talk about the resort hotels that are at Walt Disney World. One of the best things, in my opinion, about Walt Disney World, one of the things that's... I'm just going to start this again. I'm mumbling and slurring.
Yeah, all right.
Woo!